Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 307, Taproot Make 9, Sunday, January 29th, 2023. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. Each time I record an episode, I post show notes, photographs, and links to things I talk about on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. I have a whole bundle of links over on Linktree, which you can find through my Instagram profile. And they include links to classes, recent episodes, as well as Ko-fi, where you can support me with a one-time or a monthly contribution. Today's episode contains the following segments: the back porch, the front porch, and so forth, a giveaway, and off the shelf. Hello, everyone, and welcome. It's wonderful to be recording this episode for you on a very quiet, cloudy Sunday morning here in Delaware Water Gap, Pennsylvania. We have had several opportunities for a bit of snowfall that really haven't amounted in much of anything. And in general, the weather has been quite mild with a lot of rainfall. And it seems like that is a trend that's going to continue over the next week or so. One silver lining with this very mild, very rainy weather is that I've been able to continue with some paddling in my canoe upstream, which is a much different experience with all the water in the creek than it was all summer when it was just diminishing day by day. So I've been able to paddle upstream and see and hear some of the birds and their activity, both early in the morning and around dusk, which has been a great joy. It's been 2 weekends now since I taught my class in slow stitching at the Michener Museum in Doylestown, Pennsylvania. This was one of the best experiences I've ever had. It was a magical day. I so enjoyed teaching the class and sharing my experience and my love for reverse applique and upcycling fabrics. The students were amazing, so generous with their attention, and so interesting with their experimentation with the skills. And even beyond that, the staff at the museum and the exhibits we saw were absolutely incredible. And I highly recommend the Michener Museum and Doylestown in particular, because there's kind of a museum complex just within walking distance of the main street or main drag of the town. And lots of opportunities to see art, history. There was so much going on that day in the museum, and the docents were so knowledgeable, so accessible and kind. Every factor just united in making it an absolutely amazing experience. I hope it's not my last time working with the Michener Museum. But in the meantime, I will just think very fondly of that day, the class, and all of the students. This weekend, I completed a pair of mittens that I had begun in November, using Knit Spin Farm's self-striping colorway called Falling Hoarfrost. that I received on exchange from my friend Emily. And I used an adaptation of Tin Can Knit's mitten pattern, which is a very simple pattern with a ribbed cuff and stockinette mitten. Because I knit these mittens at a very fine gauge, I used US zeros, and I forget what even needle size they were calling for, but I needed to jack up the stitch count beyond even the size large in order to get an appropriately sized mitten. And even then, I didn't create a mitten that would fit me. I think it's something appropriate for my younger sister, Jessica, who has much smaller hands. And I don't know if I will maybe try that pattern again or maybe go up a needle size. I'd like to continue knitting mittens this winter, sort of as a replacement for my Go Everywhere sock knitting. One of the reasons that I was so slow on this project is that I was thinking every step of the way instead of being on automatic the way I often am with the sock knitting that I do. Now that I've completed a pair, maybe the next one will go a little more quickly. I'm not sure. But I do have quite a variety of interesting Knit Spin Farm self-striping colorways that I want to use up. And I think it's a nice change to exchange the socks for mittens over the winter season. The thing that pleases me most about these mittens is the way I was able to manage the yarn colors and the striping so that they are quite nearly perfectly matched. I was also able to manage the colors on the thumb and really write up my own version of a thumb for this pattern. The Falling Hoarfrost colorway has stripes of creamy white, red, blue, and a few shades of gold and brown. But within those colors, there are flecks of undyed yarn that give it this snowfall or snowflake or hoarfrost effect. That is very clever indeed. I've never seen it on any other yarns, and it's just a testament to how clever Joanna is as a dyer. So it was a great delight to knit with that yarn. There's hardly any left from the half skein I received from Emily, which is a great feeling. And they did work up into a very nice, very dense pair of mittens. On the front porch is another pair of mittens. I have begun the Winterlight Mittens by Abby Goodman. They are from the Amend issue of Taproot, which is issue 53. I've been attracted to these since I received my copy of this magazine. And the yarn I have begun knitting with so far is Ross Farms Black Welsh Mountain, which is a sumptuous, rich brown. It has a bit of a spongy quality to it, very similar to a Clun Forest. That's the closest thing in my experience. And I love the color and the richness of it. Already, I have veered from the pattern directions somewhat. It calls for a German twisted cast on and a brioche cuff. I opted for a tubular cast on and a 1x1 ribbed cuff. I'm knitting it at a denser gauge so that it remains nice and thick on the wrist. I maybe could have altered this to a twisted rib. Not sure, but I think I'm pretty happy with the way this is working. And because the color is so dark, and this is a farm yarn that doesn't show knitted texture quite as well as a very smooth and round yarn, I think that the ease and speed of just using a 1x1 rib is appropriate in this situation. So I'm about to do some increases and change needle size and then start the delightful color work design on these mitts. I'm hoping that by the time I complete them, there will be maybe a snowy day to take them out and do a little photo shoot. We'll see. But in the meantime, I'm having just a wonderful experience working with this Ross Farm Black Welsh Mountain. And then I'm going to add another local yarn from Hope Horn, and it is her Slate Belt yarn, which is a creamy white and has a little bit of fuzziness to it. I think that will be an interesting play in the color work. This project is the second in my Taproot Make 9. It's become a kind of tradition among knitters and crafters to create a Make 9, laying out 9 different projects or patterns or maybe even yarns from stash with which you'd like to work over the course of the year. I decided to take a little bit of a spin on that approach because one of the activities I did as kind of like a, I don't know, just a calm, restorative, reflective practice over my Christmas holidays was to go through all of my issues of Taproot. And I keep a running list on a notes program in my phone of each issue and some of the interesting projects and ideas that are in there. And as I complete them, I cross them off. This winter, I also took the opportunity to add some things that really didn't strike my fancy, perhaps, the first time I went through, but have interest to me now. I also removed some things that no longer hold a lot of interest to me. So I refined my lists. And then I selected 9 things that I have it in mind to complete over the course of the year. The first was the beetroot brownies from the trade issue of Taproot. Issue 23. These brownies are made with roasted beets. I cheated a little by buying pre-cooked beets in the produce section of my supermarket, which I sometimes purchase for a quick and easy beet and feta salad. And they also have 3 different types of chocolate. There's a melted dark chocolate bar, cocoa powder, and chocolate chips or chocolate shards or chunks. They were not like the brownies that I usually make from a Ghirardelli box mix, but they were delicious. They were easy to make. I liked that they didn't have so much sugar in them, and I even cut back a little bit on the honey that was required in the recipe. They kept really nice for several days without hardening or really changing in their texture. And overall, I would say they had a deep chocolatey flavor. I could detect a little bit of the vegetal quality of the beet, which was not unpleasant. And they had more of a delicate crumb between a brownie and a cake. They weren't dense. They weren't really fudgy. They weren't gooey. They cut nicely and served nicely without crumbling. And I served them with a little bit of sea salt caramel sauce over the top. This is just a bottled product that I purchased in the supermarket. I sometimes put a shot into coffee or use it as a drizzle over ice cream. It's a really useful product. And what I was trying to do was mimic the look of the recipe in the photographs in Taproot, because there was some sort of glaze or drizzle over the top that wasn't really mentioned in the recipe. And I think that added quite a bit to it and gave it some more visual appeal. I just love having a container of that sort of product on hand because a little bit goes a long way and I drizzle it over a lot of things. So with the beetroot brownies and the winter light mittens, I am already 2 deep into my Taproot Make 9 for the year. I will accompany this episode with a photograph featuring all of the things I hope to achieve with the help of Taproot over the course of 2023. And I'll just list here the ideas that I have in case it interests you or you'd like to play along. I also would like to bake a mushroom and leek tart. That's from issue 51. In the summer and warmer weather, I've lined up 3 fabric projects. The Moonshadow Table Runner, that's from issue 44. The North Country Dress, which I hope to make into an overalls type dress that will be great for gardening and work around the house. That's from issue 41. I would also like to try my hand at cyanotypes. That's from issue 18. That was one of the ones that I didn't initially have on my list, but as I went back through my copies of Taproot, I realized that there were some directions and project ideas in issue 18 that I'd like to try. I would also like to knit the Toadstool Doll and Leaf set by Susan B. Anderson. That's in issue 32. And I was thinking maybe I would try some quilted pot holders from issue 25. There's also a bacon maple jam recipe that I was thinking would make some good holiday gift giving. So I'm not sure about that, but I had a lot of fun with the quilted trees that I did previous to this Christmas. So I'm thinking the quilted pot holders might work out well and be a really nice, practical, and beautiful gift. And finally, in December, I would like to try the Norse pies from issue 46. That's my current plan. With a Make 9, I often do some auditing and rearranging as I go, but it was very relaxing. It was good fuel to look through those issues and make up that list. So it exists now in my phone with little heart emojis next to the projects that I plan to complete. In And So Forth today, I'll talk about 3 different stitching projects that I've been working on. I was able to add a few more patches and repairs to the sleeve of my Cambria duster. I sewed this in Merchant and Mills Woolsey, a linen wool blend, and there are some big runs along the sleeve seam. I must have pulled the fabric in a way to damage it somehow. I'm not sure. I somehow weakened it, and on the right sleeve, which certainly sees a lot more action, there are some troublesome looking thin spots. So I'm using this little speed weave like device that allows the user to create a woven patch on woven. Well, I guess you could use it on knit fabric as well. I think it's ideal for woven fabric. I have the smallest or one of the smallest sizes, so there are just maybe 10 or so hooks, and you can make a small patch of approximately an inch to an inch and a half square. I did a series of these over the winter holiday, and then I went back to the coat and did 3 more patches over this past weekend. And I still think I have a few more to go before the fabric of the sleeve is completely secure. I'm using just a very simple straight weave with no design because I'm using one color that vaguely matches the color of the coat. There are ways to do very interesting and intriguing woven designs using different colors and different techniques, but I'm just going with the simple repair at this point. I have also completed a stitch project that I began 2 years ago, and I've had spurts of working on it quite a lot and much longer spurts of not working on it at all. But I picked it up in November and started working at it in earnest again until I finally completed it. I really enjoy Rebecca Ringquist's work, and this alphabet sampler is one of her offerings from Drop Cloth. It looks like it's an alphabet sampler in running stitch. However, because the stitches, because the space between the stitches is so small, and I used a backing fabric for this sampler because I wanted it to really have nice presence and hold up well, I used a plain piece of muslin behind the sampler cloth. Because of all that, I was not able to complete the stitches as a running stitch. They look like it, but they are not. It was, you know, poke one stitch at a time type of project, which was very, very slow and methodical. I also changed colors quite frequently. So each letter of the alphabet is composed anywhere of 5 to maybe 10 different colors of thread. So that means starting and tying off each of those colors. I am very pleased with the finished product. It's very colorful and playful looking because the alphabet characters are quite irregular in size and in construction. So it has sort of an edgy, playful quality to it. And I was thinking I would make this sampler into a pillow, but now that it's complete, I think I would like to find a frame for it and ask Donna, the framer who works just downstairs in this building, to suggest some matte colors and have it matted and framed for a child's room. It feels really good to be done with this project, and it has allowed me to shift my focus now to the Stitch Camp project that I began last weekend with my friend Dee. I posted on Instagram that we were Stitch Camp late bloomers because I started watching the videos and then sort of hit pause on the project until I was able to visit Dee at her house, where she has an amazing downstairs studio and lots of paints and fun things to play with. And we were able to execute the first stage of Stitch Camp. This is a video class. It's free with signups. It runs each year. And it was taught by Gwen Headley. And essentially, the online class takes you through 5 different lessons to create your own stitched project using multiple layers and techniques. There's a coordinating Facebook page where people from Stitch Camp are posting photographs of their finished work. It's unbelievable and overwhelming the directions that people are taking these ideas and running with them. And there's everyone from extremely experienced artistic stitchers to people who are just hobby stitchers and trying these techniques for the first time. So it's the instruction is kind of very open and open-ended. And what I had decided to do was to resuscitate my mother's wedding gown into a project, or most likely a series of projects involving textile arts. The gown was one of the things I took away from my mother's home, and it had been very poorly stored, not preserved. It was in pretty rotten condition. And yet it was something that I could not give away or give up on and had no practical use for. So over the summer, I talked a lot about it with my textile buddy, Dee, and determined that it might be very interesting, cathartic, and kind of a journey to work with the gown as a medium. And so I washed it like I would any other laundry to remove like smells and as many dark spots as I could and stains. It's still a very damaged item. And so it seemed appropriate to start using some of the fabric to do some textile projects, including this Stitch Camp. So the interesting thing about this gown is that it has an opaque, satiny underlayer and a very filmy embroidered netting overlayer. And so with Dee's help, I was able to experiment with using the overlayer to create prints on the underlayer. And I worked and experimented quite a bit with that. And also with the instruction and guidance of Gwen Headley and Stitch Camp, I chose some other colors that I will use in yarn, applique fabric, embroidery thread, and maybe even other things like beads, buttons. But I have a palette of 3 colors: lavender, blood red, and a kind of a mustard. I came upon these colors by exploring the wonderful little color palette book that was given to me as a gift by my friend Mary Beth when we were at Rhinebeck, and which I turned to again and again for color inspiration. And I also like the idea of using, it's kind of like a version of the red and pink theme that is often popular around Valentine's Day, and matching red with pink. That is to me at once like really an aesthetic overload, but also strangely appealing. I have fond memories of attempting to pair red and pink in my outfits as a child, and my mother just without hesitation steering me away from that color combination. So whenever I do that, I kind of think of her. And so this bright blood red and versions of lavender is kind of like a play on that, that I think is an interesting color scheme to work with for this project. My hope is that over the course of February, continuing with these experimental techniques, I will be able to create a piece that is exhibited in a Women's History Month show at a local cultural and community center. I'm very gratified to have been invited to participate in a show, a women's show, with many, many well-respected women artists from my community. I had thought about exhibiting some work I've already completed when I received this invitation. However, I really have it in mind and as a personal goal to create something new, with new meaning and with very, very personal stories attached to it for this show. So I'll be taking you along probably in photographs and future notes about it in this podcast. And I'm very invested in seeing what results. And now it's time for a very exciting giveaway. This giveaway is a skein of Bear Mountain Sock. It is a newly developed New York State yarn that is available for purchase in the Cornwall Yarn Shop. Gail Perinello is the proprietor, and she's the one who contacted me about sending me a few skeins of this beautiful yarn and offering one up as a giveaway and knitting with and talking about the other skein. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about it and encourage you to post your entry for the giveaway. And then two of us will knit this yarn together and see what we think. Gail was inspired to come up with a sock yarn that did not have any nylon content and yet could take a spin in the washing machine without any ill effects. What she came up with was a 100% Dorset yarn, sourced and milled in New York, spun, of course, at Battenkill Fiber Mill. This yarn is being dyed in two different ways. Some of it is being sent to Green Matters for botanical dyeing, and one of the skeins that I have is called Chicory, and it's a botanically dyed yarn in a beautiful blue color. Some of the yarn is being hand-painted by Wobble Gobble. And so I have another skein in the colorway Riverside with some greens and blues and pinkish colors. I will, of course, include a photograph of these two skeins on my website and in my Instagram post for your perusal. Gail explained that these went 9 times through her regular washing cycle. She hand or line dried the socks, but they went through the regular washing machine. And the result was that they fulled slightly but did not felt. And she is really excited about the prospect of this yarn with no nylon content as a durable and worthy, practical sock yarn. Because there are sock knitters who don't mind hand washing their 100% wool socks. And there are sock knitters who really enjoy the ease of being able to throw their socks into a laundry cycle. So if you like washing your socks in the washing machine, this could be for you. It's an exciting chance to try something new. So now I hope you are very interested in entering this giveaway. And I'm going to give you two different ways to do that. One is that you could make a comment when this episode post appears on Instagram and indicate that you're excited about this Bear Mountain sock yarn. You could even say which color you would prefer or which type of dyeing you would prefer. The other method of entering into this giveaway is to make a comment on the post for this episode on my website. You can use the comments feature and do the same thing. Explain that you've heard about the yarn and which dyeing method you would prefer or what type of sock pattern you might try knitting with this. You can use one of these methods to enter, or you could use both of them and have two entries. The next time I record a regular podcast, I will announce the winner and send you your prize. So thank you, Gail, for this very generous giveaway. If you are so excited about Bear Mountain Sock that you can't wait to find out if you're the winner, then you can follow the link that I will post to the Cornwall Yarn Shop, where you can purchase both the botanically dyed and hand-painted versions of this yarn. Once again, thank you, Gail, and good luck to everyone who's entering this giveaway. Off the shelf. I confess I have fallen away from my 100-day project a little bit. I've intermittently been reading a poem a day and hope to use the month of February to get back into this project with earnest, because it really was a grounding practice and something that I enjoyed. And I'm a little disappointed, but trying to be patient with myself in having fallen away from it a bit. There's always a time and an opportunity to reconnect with something that's important. I am pleased that despite falling away from the poem a day, I have been able to keep up with the morning yoga practice that I began at the end of August. And every weekday, and typically one weekend day, I do at least 20 minutes of yoga. And that is the most consistent I've been with yoga probably my entire life. So I'm very pleased with creating a practice for that. It is super easy to build the poem a day right into that practice. So sort of there's no excuse for not doing it, but also I'm just trying to be patient with myself. So I would like to return to that, and because I know that listeners enjoy it quite a bit, put up at least one or two more poetry episodes where I read through a bunch of poetry from my collection, and I do have a wonderful collection of poetry, and it's been fascinating to rediscover some of the things on my shelf. For this episode, I'm turning to a poem that was published on the final pages of the amend issue of Taproot. There are some issues that just hold a lot of meaning, and there's a lot of stuff in it that I want to do. And this amend issue is really one of those. I just love pretty much everything in here, including this poem by E. Edward Horn titled Prairie Dusk. You've long outgrown that sweater, Prussian blue, the color of Oklahoma after sunset but before dark. When the sky bleeds color until it merges with the fading earth, the last hint of light promising dawn. I haven't outgrown my memory of you sitting at the counter with your sister and brothers in some anonymous roadside diner, looking out the window at the prairie dusk, wearing hand knits and snow boots, and laughing. I made a mistake when knitting that sweater, finished the entire back lace panel, but the count was off, the division uneven. A small error, but I could not bear it. You can pull the thread out of sweaters, unravel work, and rework until it is perfect. But fatherhood is risky. Some mistakes cannot be undone or fixed so easily. There are words I would take back if I could. Years I would frog out and re-knit. I want to discover and pass on as much wisdom with as few mistakes as we both can bear. You've long outgrown that sweater. I'm not even sure if we kept it, the faded button missing thing. I may one day outgrow that memory, but our days and years will still be linked like knitted rows to what came before, what is to come. Thank you so much for listening. I hope that the coming weeks bring you time for the crafting you enjoy, and I look forward to talking to you again soon. Bye-bye.